Hey everyone, welcome into the Fantasy Bros Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Sylvester, and we've got Joe Pisapia back on. You can follow him on Twitter at JoePisapia17. I'm at Bobby Fantasy Pro. And if you guys don't know Joe, I guess you haven't been listening very long because he comes on all the time. He's the author of the number one best-selling Fantasy Black Book series and host of the Fantasy Black Book Pod. Joe, how's it going?
It's going all right. You know, it's crazy times out there, Bobby Sylvester, but luckily you and I pretty much live quarantine lives anyway. We don't get out much. You know, we record podcasts all day and videos all day. So really for me, this is, you know, I got two kids, you got kids. It's like, you know, we don't really get out much. So this is kind of just normal for us, but I hope everyone is paying attention to the rules. And I hope everyone's doing okay. And hopefully we'll give some people a little entertainment there because that's what we need to do. We need to give everybody some information and some laughs and a little bit of sports during this weird time where there is none, which makes me wonder, Bobby, what have you been doing? You don't watch anything but sports. And I was thinking right before the show, what the hell is Bobby doing? Have you started whittling or have you started watching other TV shows that other people watch now and movies and things? What's happening with Bobby Sylvester?
You know, really nothing in my life has changed very much except instead of going to the pizza buffet, I just order pizza and then eat it at home. I'm still riding a ton. Like, I went from riding a ton to riding a lot.
Okay. Well, I started football black book already. That's like, I was like, you know what? This is a time to get ahead.
Yeah. Like, I'm doing NFL draft content and stuff. I'm releasing my third mock draft article, two round with trades. I'm doing my big board. I'm still doing a lot of fantasy baseball content because there's still people drafting, still people who want information. And, you know, over at Fantasy Pros, we started doing like our top 10 favorite TV shows. We did a 10 round draft with four analysts and it was a lot of fun. I got smoked though.
I was gonna say, anyway, well, if you get to movies, you might have to like have me like co-author that team with you or something because like, you're gonna be lost, dude.
I think what I'm gonna do is just like draft the movies that I know are famous. Like, oh, I heard those Rocky movies are good. Oh,
the Godfather is good.
Right.
Oh, good. Oh my gosh, man. Seriously though, like I picture you are like one of those people watching the marble races and watching like the spike ball, co-ed spike ball on the Ocho.
Oh yeah, man. Yeah, I love the spike ball, dude.
The spike ball is kind of entertaining, I'm not gonna lie.
Spike ball is my sport, man. In fact, we should probably go to the national championship. We don't even need to practice together. We'll just win.
Well, that's how I feel about the cornhole thing. Like, I watch those guys and I'm like, look, I'm pretty good at cornhole. I'm sure if you gave me a couple weeks to prepare, I can compete. I can compete at this level of cornhole. I'm pretty confident in myself there.
My dad is the world's greatest cornhole player. I don't think I've ever beat him.
Does he have a shirt?
Yes. Anyways, here's what we're going to be talking about on today's show. We're each going to count down five high-risk players that we're still fond of, or at least think are worth drafting, even though they're risky. And then we're going to count down five late-round gambles that we're fond of as well. First, though, hey, Joe, what do you think? Do you want to win a signed Fernando Tatis baseball bat?
Yeah, absolutely. I do. I love me some Fernando Tatis Jr. and Sr., guy who hit two grand slams in one inning. How about that? Good times.
That was a very exciting day. Eight RBIs in one innings. That will never be matched. But anyways, if you want to win the signed Fernando Tatis baseball bat, you can go to fantasypros.com/MLB/contest. Basically, it takes like 30 seconds to enter. All we're looking for are reviews on iTunes and Stitcher. So leave a review, take a screenshot of it, send it to us at contest@fantasypros.com. And we're going to pick out one lucky listener at the end of the month to give away a signed Fernando Tatis baseball bat. So you can check that out. Again, the details at fantasypros.com/MLB contest. Joe, you're first. Give me a high-risk player that you're fond of.
All right, I'm going to give you high-risk players. I'm going to put my money where my mouth is, too. These are guys high-risk that I will still take on my team. And the first one is Trey Mancini, who's going at Fantasy Pros pick number 127. And I just took him in the auction and tout wars a couple weeks ago, where all of this kind of just kind of crashed down. Bobby and I were supposed to go out to lunch. We were supposed to do TV together. I was going to have him on the TV show with me. Everything went to crap, but hopefully we can
It's going to be great, man.
I know. We'll reschedule. It'll be fine. It'll all work out. Safety first. But Trey Mancini, I got for just $5 because I was anticipating that this stuff was going to go on a lot longer than other people were. So I was drafting with that mindset.
He might not miss any time, man. Like, he was being drafted in the top 100. At this point, his ECR, that's expert consensus rankings, is 191.
I know. And I got him for $5 in the auction. And again, as we're recording this, you know, it's a good change any moment. We don't have clarity of how many games, when they're starting and what's going on. But, you know, in my best, let's say best case scenario is mid-May, right? Let's just put that out there, or late May. you know, this wasn't a baseball related injury. This was a health related injury. And he actually just got released from the hospital yesterday. And that's great. I mean, first and foremost, we want this kid to be healthy. He's a young guy dealing with cancer. That's a scary thing. It was a colon cancer thing. They removed the tumor. Hopefully he'll be okay. He'll be on meds. He'll be on regimen. He'll be able to ramp back up. But there's nothing baseball related wrong with him. And I feel like, you know, your job or the thing you love to do is the best medicine. So getting this guy back out there on the field is probably number one in his mind after making sure he's doing everything properly. And what you're getting is a player playing in a great ballpark who's got real power, who is going to hit in the middle of this order in the three or four spot and qualifies at more than one position. And if you're going to give me that significant of a discount, like I said, the $5 I got him for a tout, or you know, we're saying bound to 191 in some recent drafts, that is a discount I'm willing to take, because first base ain't that good, Bobby. Like, there's a significant drop-off after the Freemans and Olsons, and getting a guy like Mancini on a discount, I'll take that risk.
There's not many first basemans I love this year. I'm getting a lot of CJ Crones, you know what I mean? Waiting until that range. Joey Votto, Eric Hosmer, I don't feel great about it. If I can get Trey Mancini in the 14th round, oh yeah, man, I'll do that.
Yeah, and you could back it up with one of those other guys, because, you know, if for some reason he does still miss time or whatever, or lags behind, there's enough of those dudes that you just mentioned that you can get for nothing at the end and try to piecemeal it together with the Daniel Murphys of the world, which I think is what I ended up doing. But
oh, Daniel Murphy. Yeah, that's another good one that I would like to get.
You know, that was a 15-team league in tout in the auction, but I think I picked him up for a buck at the end of the draft.
So you'll get him for 1 month and then Trey Mancini the rest of the season.
One can only hope, or who knows, maybe even better. We'll see. I like that. Some of these guys on my list here are on that tout team. So there's a theme here going, Bobby. There's a theme happening.
So there's a couple guys here. So you like the high-risk players then?
Well, I'm very careful. I'm high-risk for the high-reward in the right ratio of things. So
okay. See, not me. I'm drafting all high-risk guys. Like, if I draft 25 of them, 16 are going to turn out. The other guys, I'll just cut them. Who cares?
Love it. Go ahead. So who's your first one?
I mean, not exactly 25, but I do draft a lot of high-risk guys. Everyone who listens to the show knows that.
I was like, that's a whole roster, Bob.
Here's what I want to know about Mancini, okay? So he's probably going to miss a little bit of time, right? We're expecting the season to start in, what, mid-June, I think is a fair estimate. Maybe it gets pushed back longer. Maybe they do end up playing a full year. But Mancini's probably not going to miss that much time. How much time is Yasiel Puig going to miss? Is he going to be on a team? How much time is Byron Buxton going to miss? He's going ahead of Trey Mancini. What about Kyle Tucker? Is he even going to start the season in the big leagues?
God knows. There's no clarity there. And there's no clarity with Puig also, because, you know, my worry with Puig is if it is a shortened season, you know, what's the draw of going after and signing a guy like that? Or what's the draw for him to go out there and play on a shortened year contract? There's a lot of questions here. Puig is a very dangerous one. I toyed with putting him on my list, but at the end, I left him off it.
Yeah. So all those guys are being drafted ahead of Mancini. I think Mancini's better than all of them except Kyle Tucker. And Kyle Tucker is my number 5 on the list. I think Kyle Tucker is Trey Mancini with 25 steal upside.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. Kyle Tucker is certainly a talent. The problem is Dusty Baker hates your fantasy team. He does not care.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, there's a chance Kyle Tucker gets like 150 at-bats this year.
It is. And some of this depends on Alvarez's health, too, and how bad is that knee, really. We'll find out. But I think the upside of Kyle Tucker, where you can draft him, I think it's worth it. I do think the talent is worth it. And you know me, I'm like you. I think we love those post-type guys. You know, the guys that everybody's red hot on, they don't hit right away, so everybody just kind of sours. But meanwhile, I mean, he's way too young to give up on altogether. And who knows? I mean, Houston could be in a scenario where, I mean, look at this Verlander injury, right? Maybe Kyle Tucker becomes a piece they move because they are in win now mode and he goes and plays somewhere else.
Please trade Kyle Tucker. Please trade him to the Cardinals. Can we get that?
I don't think you're going to, I'm trying to think of who they would want there. Carlos Martinez, you gonna make that move?
I was thinking Dakota Hudson, man. He's like 23 years old, won 16 games last year, 3.4 ERA.
Yeah, but there's a lot of outliers in that.
I mean, you got to trade more than that too, but like,
I don't know. But if Carlos Martinez gets off to a good start,
we'll trade you Tyler O'Neill too.
You know what? That could be it. You could get some help there, you know, given one of those outfielders. That's actually not terrible. There, look at us. Look at us making trades, making things happen.
Okay, who's your number 4?
My number 4 is a guy that I also drafted in Tout Wars. Got him for $18, and the news just came out this past week that if spring training games were still going on, that this guy would be playing in them, and his name is Giancarlo Stanton.
Oh, yeah, that's my number four, baby. Let's go.
Oh, my goodness. Look at us. Synchronicity. We are right there, neck and neck.
I'm not giving you guys another name either because I'm doubling down on Stanton.
Let's just double down because here's my thought, and then you obviously, you know, give me yours. But right now, I'm way more concerned about Aaron Judge than I am about Stanton. And I'm a guy that typically does not go the Stanton route. But if you're going to give him to me for $18 in auction, I'm going to take that.
I mean, he'd be playing, where was he just a couple months ago, right? Before his injury, and now he's healthy.
Right, and now he's healthy, and he does DH. He doesn't play the field all that much, so that's always a positive over Judge. And then we found out Judge had a collapsed lung, and all these other things are coming. I'm like, ugh, where's all this information coming out to trickle about Judge? I don't like it. If you go back a couple years ago, you know, even if this is a shortened season, there was a season where Stanton played 123 games and at 37 home runs. I'll take that. I'll take that for $18, that discount in a season-long roto, and I'll take it all the way to the bank.
I mean, 2017, 2018, what'd he miss? He missed 7 games?
I know.
He used to be injury-prone, and then last year he missed a big chunk of the season. But this is a guy who's shown he can be durable. He did 59 home runs in Miami, the worst hitter's park, and he moves to New York, the second-best hitter's park. The dude could legitimately hit 70 homers with 150 RBIs in this lineup and ballpark.
Yeah, and again, I just think that these are the guys that I don't think have as much risk. That's why they have him fifth and fourth. I had Mancini. I was like, I don't think there's all that much risk. And with Stanton, there's risk. I don't think it's all that much considering where the market seems to be telling you. Now, that might change in a couple weeks. I think you might have missed that window. But what do you think? Do you think we've missed the window? Like, that was like 2 weeks ago where you had the Stanton discount, and now it's going to be gone by the time?
I think we missed the window for the extreme discount. I think that the window is still going to remain for the Stanton discount because his ADP a couple months ago was 48, 49, end of the fourth round, beginning of the fifth. Stanton's a top 30 player in my mind. I mean, just comparing to Judge, who was going in the top 30. He's got less risk than Judge, and he's better than Aaron Judge.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sold, baby. I told you, I saw that, and that discount allowed me to get Devers for $29 in that same draft. I was able to get JD Martinez for $35. I got Garrett Cole on that team for $40.
Sounds like my kind of team, man. Minus Garrett Cole, but yeah, Devers, JD Martinez, I'm getting a lot of shares.
Cole went for $40 to me, and the next pitcher, DeGrom, went for almost $50. And then a bunch of the other guys went for around $38, you know, $37. So, you know. It's like everything's always about trying to get the right guy at the right time in auctions, and I felt like that happened a lot.
Yeah, that 40 is a good value for Garrett Cole. Here's where I would take Giancarlo Stanton, okay? Not until Clayton Kershaw's off the board, Yordan Alvarez is off the board, Mondesi's off the board, Springer's off the board. Once those guys are gone, I'll take Giancarlo Stanton in the fourth, fifth round. He's going in the sixth.
Yeah, I could even argue over Alvarez just because we have seen a longer sample size.
Sure. I think Alvarez is a much better player, though. I think he probably is. There is some risk, but...
Well, that's the thing. I think we're still in that probably, whereas I think we know what Stanton is, and I think whenever you can do that...
Yeah, there's regression risk and injury risk with Alvarez.
Well, look, I mean, how good was Cody Bellinger year one, right? And then we saw him bottom out in the summer of the second season. How good was Devers in year one? And then he bottomed out in the second season. So these things do happen. There's less of that risk. I can see why you'd want to go Alvarez.
I mean, there's a chance he's the number one hitter in baseball. I'm not talking like fantasy hitter because obviously he's not going to steal 30 bases like Acuna, but...
No, but this is a guy who could hit 275 with 40 home runs in 138.
He could bat 330, man. He batted 315 last year, didn't he?
Dude's a beast.
He is good, man. He played half a season and hit 27 homers. 78 RBIs.
I know, dude. He's on fire. But, you know, books get out on people, too. Who's your number three? I'm curious, since we both had Stanton at four.
All right. I was going to say Mondesi. Let's just roll right into it.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah. And Dan Harris and I talked about this on the last podcast, that the dude is just... I mean, when stolen bases are hard to come by, and you've got a guy who missed 60 games last year and still stole 43 bases, and he did that with a 290 on base percentage. I mean, if he plays a full season... And he gets that on-base percentage up to a respectable level. What, 320? That's not that hard. If he gets it over the 320 with full season worth of games, he's stealing 65 bases. 15, 20 homers.
Yeah. For me, when I think about Mondesi, this is the point where the roads between analyzing deep stats and common sense diverge. Because you get a lot of the fantasy community people who will dig into a lot of the deeper stats and almost overanalyze themselves out of Mondesi. And I think that's the wrong thing to do. I think you make a really good point. His OBP is not going to be great. But at the same time,
His batting average isn't going to be bad. He's going to bat 270. He always does.
Right. And the batting average gets propped up by the speed. So that's, you know, one of those things. And I think the OBP will continue to get, you know, hover in that 300 range. And that's okay as long as he continues to steal second base when he gets on first. And that's the thing he's doing. So as long as he continues to have a high stolen base rate, you can tolerate the lower OBP. It's when that caught stealing rate jumps up that you start to question it. So right now, until that happens, is a guy with power and speed. And I agree, there's risk, but I like the reward there too.
Prorate him to a full season, 162 games played. We're looking at 15 homers, 99 ribbies, 93 runs, 69 stolen bases, 263 batting average. That's really good, man. That is league winner upside. I mean, if he stays healthy, he's a first round value. If he doesn't lose his job, like Jonathan Villar did a few years back when he was a similar type of player.
Well, you know, I don't think there's anybody really running to take his job over there in KC.
Right.
You know, that's not quite the problem there. My number three is Frankie Montas, who I have pretty much everywhere. And there's risk there. You know, whenever a guy gets popped for a PED suspension, there's risk. And it's kind of the same thing. I was all over Polanco last year, and that worked out pretty well because a lot of people weren't. Because why? He got popped with a PED suspension. But the 96 innings he threw last year were not good. They were elite. You're talking about a guy, and I don't like to extrapolate, but if you took his 96 innings and made him 180.
He's a legitimate Cy Young candidate. That's what he was.
He is a legitimate Cy Young candidate. He's probably going to have an ERA probably hovering around 3. He's going to have 200 strikeouts, probably around 50 walks. He's going to have a K per 9, you know, hovering in the high 9 range. He doesn't walk many guys either. He's going to have a 4-to-1 K walk ratio or somewhere around there. But really the problem is the concern of, oh my goodness, was the PEDs the reason he was so good? But then he came back at the end and had a start just like he had all during the year. So that assuaged any fears that I had about Montas. And I'm drafting him as a 3, as a 4. And I expect him to be basically like a secondary ace most of the weeks.
Here's my problem with Montas. He's not Madison Bumgarner. If I'm drafting a starting pitcher, then I'm drafting Madison Bumgarner, man.
Oh, why? Because of his 5 ERA on the road last year? Is that why?
I don't have any shares of Montas. He's a good pick. Madison Bumgarner has never had an ERA above 4. He's only once had a whip.
Well, last year on the road, it was 5 and change.
So, but, I mean, he had a 3.90 ERA. You look at him on baseballsavant.com, and all his underlying metrics suggest that the ERA was inflated. He was unlucky last year. He's historically, every year, 2.8, 2.98, 2.93, 2.74, 3.32, 3.26, and then last year 3.90, but his underlying metrics suggest it still should have been 3.3. His whip is always under 1.15. This is a guy who struck out 203 batters last season. He always pitches 200 innings. You're going to get 200 innings, 200 strikeouts, 12 wins with good ratios. I'm not picking anybody else in this round. I'm picking Mad Bum every time. 10th round.
I understand the Mad Bum argument. Mad Bum also has a lot of miles on him. So that's sort of a different environment. He's also a cow roping champion, I believe, as well, that we found out. So there's a lot of things that, you know, if he keeps doing those stupid rodeo things and, like, you know, like that. That was very eye-opening to me. Now it makes me rethink the whole ATV accident that he was riding a bull or something stupid like that, you know? And there's some risk there with that guy. You know, I don't know if his new contract allows him to do these things, but man, this little...
I don't think there's as much risk as Frankie Montas, man.
Well, here's the thing. They both have risk. But in this case right now, I've found that in recent years, I've had to change my logic. My logic was always lean towards the veteran. Always. Always. In recent years... I've changed my tune. It's the veterans that kind of start to bottom out faster, and it's the young guys that are carrying these teams. And I'm going to go with the 27-year-old here.
All right. You know, there's 4 really similar starting pitchers in this range. I just want you to rank them for me, okay? Montas is probably your number 1. Zach Gallen, who I also like, Madison Bumgarner, and Denelson Lamet.
That's probably the order that I would rank them.
Okay.
But Lamet is really true. You know, like, oh, I feel, man, like
if there's like a sleeper candidate to win the Cy Young in the National League, it's him. He can strike out 300 guys.
He's one of those tantalizing talents. I feel like that guy is all about where you get him. If you can get him as cheap as possible, then it's great. The more you have to, the more onus you put on him in your fantasy rotation, I think it's dangerous because then he has to perform. The more he becomes like your 5th starter, you know, your 4 or whatever it is in a really good rotation.
Because there's like a 30% chance we get to the All-Star break and he doesn't have a job in the rotation.
Oh, yeah. There's real bottom out potential there too. You know, there. You know, let's not forget that ERA was pretty high.
I mean, he was one of the best pitchers in baseball over the last 2 months, though. I mean, the dude struck out 75 guys in 50 innings. Like, you guys probably heard me say, he's got potential to strike out 300 and just rolled your eyes. That's hyperbolic. If you prorate 50 innings to 200 at 75 Ks, that's 300 strikeouts, guys. Now, he's not going to get to 200 innings, but I'm saying this is a guy with that kind of potential. You don't find that outside the top 100 picks.
No, and San Diego is also, if he should bottom out, San Diego's got guys in the pipeline like Gore, like Patino, that a lot of other organizations do not have. So I think there is not a lot, but certainly a fair amount of pressure there for him to get out of the gate on a positive note this season too, and try to, you know, get a little bit better control and all those things too, because, you know, the strikeouts are great, but at the same time, you want this guy to be pitching 6-7 innings, not 5.
Right. So give me your number two.
My number two is Chris Davis with a K. Crush Davis.
I remember you talking me into Chris Davis about a month ago. I've been drafting him so much since then, dude. I can't believe his ADP still.
He just keeps falling and falling and falling. And here's the thing. You do kind of, the only risk I see here is that you are locking yourself into that position of utility DH guy. And that's fine. I don't think he's going to play the field much, especially since he ran into a wall last year. They're going to try to avoid that as best they can. But when you look at a guy, again, 42, 43, 48, 102, 110, 123, hit 247 every single one of those seasons. Actually, four seasons in a row if you want to add the year before that. This is a dude that has light tower power. This is a guy that was nothing but incredibly consistent. Every year, basically averaging 90 runs scored, having 140 hits, hitting 40 bombs, driving in 100 runs. And he has one year where he gets like hurt on the field playing, and everybody just wants to disregard him. And the fact that he soldiered through it most of the year, too. He played 133 games, and probably 100 of them hurt. Dude, I don't get it. And the risk is you've locked yourself into that spot, and you can only play him in that one spot, but if that guy gives me 40 home runs from that spot, I'll take that all day long.
Joe, he got hurt on May 21st, and then he came back 10 days later, right? He went on the 10-day DL, he still was hurt.
And he probably shouldn't have. And that's probably to his detriment, but you know what? I respect him for trying.
This is what he was doing through those 43 games. He was batting .247. He was on pace for 46 homers, 110 RBIs. That's exactly who Chris Davis was. He's still the same player. He just was playing hurt last year. Now he's healthy.
You could set your watch to Chris Davis, okay?
He was being drafted in the top 50 last year. Like, what is the difference here?
And right now, on Fantasy Pros, he is at 177.
That's his ADP, consensus ADP across multiple sites, yeah.
77. Now, you're telling me how many guys in that almost 200 range have 40 home run potential in them? Because I can't name a whole lot.
Let me see if I can find one, man. That's going to be hard to do.
You go find me one. You find me one 25 picks after him, or 50 picks after him, for that matter.
Maybe Willie Calhoun if he was healthy the whole season.
Yeah, Willie Calhoun's a good one, but the only reason he slipped that far is because he got hit in the face.
I don't see anyone, man.
No, and that's what I mean. And there's always this negative stigma, guys like him, guys like Cruz, because they're DHs. And you know what? You can play around with that carousel where you're trying to get productivity out of all these guys. You keep, you know, swirling in and out of that role, or you could just set it and forget it with Cruz, with Davis, with guys like that, that you just know what you're going to get. Like back in the day, like Mike Sweeney was that guy. Remember Mike Sweeney just hit the baseball all day long. You just leave him in a DH. Like, okay, yeah, I'll take the discount on Mike Sweeney. Go ahead. He'll hit 320 and hit me 20 bombs and that's fine. And just leave it, set it and forget it, man. And Davis is just too much talent. So who's your number two here?
My number two, by the way, another guy with that kind of upside for home run, CJ Cron.
No, he had 40.
He hit 25 homers in 113 starts last year.
Yeah, but the problem is, how many starts does he make in Detroit even? Like, I know he's going to get more, but 40's a lot.
40's a lot.
40's a, that's serious stuff.
I mean, the dude missed 50 games and still hit 25 bombs.
I like Cron. I'm in the team Cron, don't get me wrong.
40's probably a reach, though. Yeah, he's not Chris Davis.
Calhoun's the best argument. Calhoun, I'm with you on that one.
Oh, his bat's loud. Yep. My number two is Vlad Guerrero Jr.
Sure.
This guy's extremely young. His exit velocities are extraordinary. I mean, the bat is legitimate. He's probably the best hitting prospect we've seen since, I mean, Mike Trout, Albert Pujols, Miguel Cabrera, Ken Griffey Jr. You can throw his name in with those guys. Now, there are guys that collapse, absolutely. But do you remember Mike Trout in his first year in the big leagues? He was awful. Much worse than Vlad Guerrero was. This is legitimately one of the top five prospects in the last 30 years. There's a chance that this year he wins the MVP in the American League. I don't think it's going to happen, but there's like a list of 10 guys who could do it. He's one of them.
Here's a question for you, and this might be kind of on the negative end, but, you know, let's play around. Let's have some fun. There's no baseball. It's the end of March here. We're all going stir crazy. What happens if Vlad Guerrero has another injury of some kind and he misses a significant portion of this shortened season or whatever the season becomes again? Does he start to get that tag already where people think, oh, the body type, or he's not in good enough shape? You think he'll get that negative stigma?
Just like Miguel Sano, right? Miguel Sano missed all this time. Jorge Soler missed all this time. And guess what? They came back, and when they were healthy, they dominated.
Look at Anthony Rendon. How many years was he hurt early in his career?
Everyone always said that Anthony Rendon was one of the most injury-prone players in baseball.
Bust, stop, give up. Well, that's how I feel about Correa, too, where he's in that same thing where everyone's just, like, ready to give up, and the dude's 25.
He was an MVP candidate before he got hurt 2 years ago.
The dude is 25. Can we please just calm the hell down about Carlos Correa? Please, give this guy a full 155 or something like that. And let's see what happens when he's 26 years old this year. Let's see what happens.
Isn't that how we felt about Stanton, too? And then he was healthy for two straight seasons. It was amazing.
There's a long list of these guys. And that's why in dynasty leagues, you know, it always behooves you to, you know, with some of these guys where you have to pay enormous premiums on before they get to the big leagues. When you wait for this little downturn, that's when you pounce. You pounce when Cody Bellinger is hitting a .180 in July 2 years ago. You pounce when Vlad Guerrero goes on the DL a second time for another, you know, rib cage injury or something like that. That's when you pounce on these guys if you don't want to pay the extreme. And I think like Wander Franco is that next guy too, where everybody's going to start to pay the extreme. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see.
But he's 19 years old. I don't know. When he comes up, he's going to bat 300 right away.
I think he's going to play this year.
He's got the best pure bat I've seen in a long time, man.
I think he plays this year.
I think so, too.
I really do. And I took him in town for $1, too. He's on my roster.
I don't have any shares of Vlad Guerrero just because he's going in the same stage as Tyler Glasnow, Giancarlo Stanton. I might even reach for Marcus Semien. I think I like him a little bit more than Vlad Guerrero Jr. I mean, Marcus Semien, I don't think people realize how great he was last year. He was every bit as good as Trevor Story.
Well, the funny thing about Semien is that if you go back and you read the 2019 Black Book about Marcus Semien, it was glowing about, look, this is one of the best values you're going to find at shortstop. He's got power. He's got a little speed. His second half of 2018 was really good. Like, everything was trending in the right direction of things clicking for him. And then it just clicked in a major way last year. And
I mean, he was better than Alex Bregman last year. You look at the fantasy numbers. He had more runs. He had a little bit less power. RBIs were the same. Twice as many steals. Same batting average. Yeah.
That's the crazy part. Nobody's buying into Semien right now.
He's going six rounds after Bregman.
Yeah. Him, Tim Anderson, Carlos Correa, Corey Seager. There's a group of shortstops that just continue to fall in every draft I was in. It was
Anderson's gonna bat like 260, man. He had a 415 BABIP,
and that's all fine, but at the end of the day, is this an everyday player who's gonna be mildly productive at least? Yeah,
2020, sure.
And that's the thing. It's like, well, that's nothing to sneeze at nowadays. Like,
yeah,
and if he's hitting the two hole in that order, hello, like, that's a good order. You know, let's see. Is he hitting one or two up there? Like, that's a lot of this has to do with lineup placement for some of these guys too. Like, Semien's gonna hit the top of the Oakland order again. And that makes him incredibly valuable because that order has got some serious thump in it, especially if Davis bounces back too with Chapman and Olsen. That's a serious 3-4-5 right there.
You know, and then they add my number one, who I'm going to talk about. I'm going to skip you. I'm going to go first. You know, you got Frankie Montas, who's going to be here for a full season. AJ Puck is likely going to be here for a full season. Sean Manaea is going to be back. He only pitched 30 innings last year. You got Jesus Luzardo joining him, and he's the best of the bunch. I mean, this is a guy who I was drafting around, I don't know, 120, 130 range, just because he's going to be on an innings limit, right? This is a better version of Chris Paddock. They were saying last year before he got hurt, Jesus Luzardo is going to start on opening day for the A's. He was already the best pitcher in the organization. That's who he is. Second best pitcher in the minor leagues behind Mackenzie Gore. And he's ready to go on opening day. There's not going to be an innings limit because it's probably going to be a shorter season. Dude, I'd draft him in the top 80 if I had to. Now, I don't have to because he's not going there. But I'm going to get a ton of shares of Luzardo at this point.
Yeah, I was a guy who owned a lot of Luzardo shares in some dynasty and keeper situations last year. And it's funny, I was able to sell them off before the season started, and I got enormous returns. And one of them in the Dynasty League, I actually got Gerrit Cole for Luzardo, basically straight up. And the thought process was, give me the best pitcher in baseball now. Well, it was a team that was rebuilding, and they looked at Lizardo as the best prospect in baseball, right? So I was like, you know what? Here's the best pitching prospect in baseball. Give me the best pitcher now, and everybody wins. And I won. I won that deal with Gerrit Cole. I know he had a really good spring. I get that. Like, he was striking guys out at a high clip.
It's disgusting.
It was. But I feel like he's ticking up where... This is where there's real risk, because whenever you have a guy that's got shoulder issues, you just never know when it's going to creep up again or when something's going to happen again. So it's one thing where he's going at a normal level. When you start having to pay a round, two rounds, three rounds higher than you normally would for him, like, you know, when this draft season starts, that's where you really got to think about things. And I agree with you. The upside's there. I'd probably take the upside because I like the team. I like the ballpark. I like the skills. But it's definitely a risk right now. There's no way around that.
Here's a couple guys he's going after, though. Eduardo Rodriguez, shoulder issues. Carlos Carrasco, all kinds of health issues.
Yeah, but you know what? Eduardo Rodriguez threw 200 innings last year, and that's impressive to me. Like, you got to give that guy credit there.
Yeah, I mean, but his ratios have never been good, ever. His ERA last year was the best ERA in his career, 3.76. His WHIP was the second best in his career, 1.32.
Keep that K rate over 9, and I'm a happy camper. You know, it's the American League.
He's solid, sure, but I think Lizardo's much better. I don't think he's as durable, but of course, if it's a shortened season, that changes things. He's going behind Carrasco. He's going behind Sonny Gray, Mike Soroka, Brandon Woodruff. I'm taking him over all those guys.
I can understand the upside being greater than Woodruff for sure, and some of those other guys you said as well. It's funny because my number one is a pitcher too, and this is a guy that pitches for an outstanding team. I feel like people have forgotten about how good he was when we saw him last, how devastating that K rate is.
Lance McCullers.
You got it. You nailed it. And it's another guy that I own practically everywhere. And
me too. Yeah, you're lucky you're not in my league, because I would draft him before you would.
We're the kind of people that could go in on a team. Like, there's very few people that you could say, you know, I can own a team with that person and we'll see things the same way. You know, in terms of like what we would target. But I look at McCullers, and now look, if this becomes a 120 game season, I love McCullers value, because there's a whole other thing. Because now you're talking about, you know, 150 innings being maybe the max he's even able to throw. So sign me up for that.
Did you see his new changeup? Oh, I mean, first of all, he's got the best curveball in baseball. His changeup is disgusting, man.
He's another guy. He's just 25 years old.
In his first 2 years, 3.22, 3.22. He strikes out like 2,000 guys per 9 innings.
Here, everybody come sit by the fireplace, because Uncle Joe's going to tell you a story. At 21, in 2015, this dude threw 125 innings. Okay? At 21 years old. This guy has enormous talent. Now, granted, he had missed time with injuries, but he's been in the big leagues for 4 seasons already. Like, he's not new to the big leagues. He's not new to the big stage. And you're telling me he's finally healthy, and this is a guy that has an enormous, like, we're talking about 10 K per 9 possible ratio. We're talking about a guy that could have a WHIP in the 1-1 something. You know, those guys do not grow on trees. You know the offense is going to support him. You know that he's got good defense around him. There's so many positives when it comes to McCullers. Now, if they go to the wacky 140-something game schedule with the doubleheaders, okay, maybe things change a little bit. But you're talking about risk-reward. I'm willing to risk a lot with Lance McCullers this year, because I think that guy can be a huge return on investment.
Here's the biggest positive for Lance McCullers. He's my sports doppelganger, so he's a hunk.
Wait, I gotta look at him again. Let's see. I know what you look like. I've seen your duck face pictures lately. You know what?
There's a duck face pictures.
I saw you on Instagram. You know, the burning, smoldering look of Bobby Sylvester. You know what? You know what? You're not wrong. You're not wrong. There is kind of a quality when he's got the beard there. Yeah. All right. That's not that far off. It's not crazy.
All right. Let's move on to late round gambles. These are guys going outside the top. I don't know.
Put that half fade in your hair too. He's got one picture. He's got the full hair, but the other part shaved. You going to go that route?
Nah, I don't do that kind of thing, man. No,
I just check it.
So guys, ADP outside the top 200. I think you went a little bit deeper than I did. But these are some guys who are just gambles, right? They could really pay off, or you know what? They suck last year, like Freddie Peralta did for me, and you cut him really quick. Not a big deal.
Yeah, and I think whenever you're looking for that, like I try to do, let's see, 290 and above. Like, I'm really trying to go to those deeper leagues and stuff like that. And first guy on my list is Nick Solak, because I just think they're going to find ways to get the bat in the line. The fact that they didn't sign Donaldson, the fact that they didn't, with the new ballpark opening, make a big move, the fact that they moved from Mazar and didn't really kind of come up with a backup plan there. It just feels like they're going to find a way for this guy to somehow get in there and get at bats. He's not the best glove in the world, so that's going to hurt him there. But at the same time, this is a guy that, you know, you look at the minor league track record and, you know,
every single year he hits. He's just one of these guys.
He's got four minor league seasons, about 400 games. And over those 400 games, he's got a composite of hitting 294 with a 383 OBP and a 468 slugging. That is a useful little player.
And he steals, too.
Yeah, he's got a little bit of speed in there. He could pop 5-6 stolen bases easily, maybe even 10.
He had 21 back in 2018, but he didn't steal much last season. He had 7 bags over 148 games. So,
well, I always like to look at double A numbers. That to me is always, you know, that's the best indicator of what a guy's real upside is, because double A is the best raw talent. And then when you get to triple A and you deal with PCL, everything gets wackadoo there.
Sure. And PCL is like everything is Coors Field, right?
Yeah, basically. And over 126 double A games, he gave you basically 2075. I'll take that. Scored 90 runs, had 834 OPS. Okay. Like at 290 or whatever he's going at draft wise. That's a useful bench bat to have.
He's a solid player, man, for sure. And it looks like he's going to play. I don't have any problem with Solak. I just don't see a ton of upside, I guess.
There might not be a ton of upside, but I think when you're looking at, you know, the 300 range, you're looking at bats, you know, mild productivity. Plus, he's got a name that sounds like something that would eat you from Star Wars, like the Solak. It sounds bad.
All right. Wander Franco. I mean, there's a chance. I mean, remember when Juan Soto was 19 years old? And he wasn't on anyone's draft radar. He wasn't even a top 10 prospect. He was like number 12 at that time.
You're right. I'm with you. That's why I'm drafting Wander Franco everywhere.
Right. I mean, like, look at all the guys the past couple years who were rookies and just dominated right away. Pete Alonso last year at 50 bombs. Aaron Judge hit 50 bombs as a rookie. Now, Wander Franco's not the kind of guy who's going to hit 50 bombs, but he's the kind of guy who's eventually going to bat 340, 350 with 30 home runs. I mean, this guy can hit the crap out of the ball. And he's going to come up right away because that's what these rookies do, and they dominate. And if this is a shortened season and the Rays think they're going to compete, they're going to get their best guy up pronto.
Yeah, I agree. And I like Willy Adames, don't get me wrong, but he's not going to be the reason why you don't see Wander Franco. Like, I just, you know, that's not going to be the thing that keeps him from coming to the big leagues. The Adames will get moved somewhere else.
He was pretty good last year in the second half.
He is. He's a decent player, but I feel like Franco is a difference maker player, and I feel like the Rays can look at this division right now. Chris Sale is done for the year with Tommy John. The Yankees have a ton of injury concerns. Their rotation was falling apart, basically. You know, they lose Severino. God knows what you get out of Tanaka. Paxton was hurt. But, you know, the Rays could be one of these teams that's like, you know what, let's just go all in and go for it. And it wouldn't shock you if Franco played a lot more games this year than you'd realize.
Their team is stacked, man, and they have so much depth, too. You look at their bench. They're stacked everywhere. Their bullpen is stacked. Their rotation's like 8 deep with good pitchers.
Yeah. You're preaching to the choir here with the Rays. They're not the greatest fantasy asset team because of the way they use everybody, but they are a team that I think that you have to pay attention to, especially in the daily fantasy world, too. Like, there's always room for them in daily because they are cheap because there's so many matchup guys. So you can go up and just play the matchups the way the Rays play the matchups and kind of utilize them as little, like, you know, lineup builder kind of guys in terms of budget. The next guy on my list is Yoshi Setsugo, because that guy's got a little bit of power.
He's a lot of fun, man. You got to go watch his YouTube videos.
Dude, I just watched him. They were repeating the WBC this past weekend. I don't know if you caught that over on MLB Network. And I got to see him take a couple at bats. I just kind of stumbled on it right when he was up. And I saw him take a couple at bats and I was like, you know, this guy, you know, I was impressed.
He has mammoth power.
He has big power to the opposite field too, which is, that's the thing I always like, that's the thing. You hit a ball hard the other way, I'm like, all right, off big league pitching. Like it was against the American team. I forget which pitcher it was, but it was like Tanner Roark or somebody, you know, like a legitimate major league starter. That's the kind of stuff where I go, all right. And he'll see Tanner Roark in Toronto this year, mind you. So I'm looking at a guy like Setsugo where you're saying, hey, cost you nothing. Pick number 318, a little late power. Sign me up, man. Let's go for it.
He was really, really good over in Japan. Last 4 years, OPS 950. I mean, like Hideki Matsui, you remember, he came over right
that's
away.
That's exactly what he reminds me of.
That's amazing. He came over right away and was an MVP candidate. And Setsugo's not Matsui, but he's pretty close.
Well, Matsui wasn't Matsui. Matsui was, isn't, you know, hit 50-something home runs in Japan. That's not going to happen here. But
Setsuko hit 44, batted 322.
Hey, look, I just think he's kind of in that mold. I don't think he's quite as polished of a hitter.
Right.
But he's got opposite field power. The power is legitimate. And that's an order that kind of lacks power. You know, so they could really use that bat in the lineup more often than not. So I'm a fan.
Do you remember when Jose Abreu came over and he was being drafted like super late? And it was just the easiest bargain of all time because he batted like 450 in Cuba with like 50 billion home runs. He was like the greatest hitter on the planet and he's going stupid late.
I was so mad when the Mets didn't sign him. I was like, God. And at the time, we had nothing at first base. It was such a disaster. It was like,
right.
We were probably trying to recover from Ike Davis or some nonsense like that. And there I was. I'm like, God, can we please just get this guy? This guy is so good. It's not going to cost us any draft pick. Just go get this guy.
Right. And it was the same with Cespedes, too. When Cespedes came over, he was amazing right away. And he was drafted super late. He was an MVP candidate in day one.
So frustrating. This is my life as a Mets fan. I hate it. Baseball has become a world game, and the, you know, the talent that now comes over is, I think, more consistent than it was, you know, 10, 15 years ago.
Right.
You know, where you had the high-end Ichiros, but you also had the lower-end Kaz Matsuis of the world, too.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely much more predictable than it was. By the way, as a Mets fan, do you want to talk about Noah Syndergaard?
No, I don't. I don't want to talk about it at all. I just talked about it on the Black Book podcast we just recorded, and I lost my mind, so there's going to be some beeps on there. I done lost my mind, Bobby, because I was like, you know, I was just having a good day. Everything was rolling, and then I check my phone, and I see all this Noah Syndergaard stuff, and I'm like, where's this coming from? Why?
The good news is Michael Wacha is going to move into your rotation now.
That's the good news, huh? That's the good news.
Yeah. I can relate a little bit just because I remember where I was when Luis Robert signed with the Chicago White Sox, because they were saying all along it was the Cardinals. He has a bunch of good friends in the Cardinals organization. The Cardinals are in on the bidding. He's going to be the guy that ends up with the Cardinals finally. They're going to spend money. The White Sox swooped in and spent like an extra $1 million. Now he's the best prospect in baseball. And I remember I was in the Chick-fil-A drive-thru line on my way to vacation, and it ruined my whole vacation because the Cardinals didn't sign Luis Robert.
But the Syndergaard thing just came out of nowhere. Like, there were no reports of him having elbow soreness or issues or getting shut down in spring. It's just like, oh, dude, by the way, it's Tuesday afternoon, and Noah Syndergaard's having torn UCL surgery. What? What do you mean? By the way, fun trivia. You ready for this? I just did this on the show with the boys. I thought you'd get a kick out of this. There's only one pitcher in the Hall of Fame who's had Tommy John surgery. Can you name him?
Oh.
You're Mr. Baseball. Come on, Bobby Sylvester. One pitcher. It's only like about 15, 20, you know, 20-something years of Tommy John surgeries now. So it's not a huge amount of people, but in terms of that were eligible for Hall of Fame. But only one guy is in there. I'll give you a hint. He was a starter and then a reliever. And he was great at both of those things.
Oh, man.
That's your hint. I'll give you a hint.
Eck?
No. No, good guess. No, John Smoltz.
Oh, sure. Yeah, of course.
The only guy in the Hall of Fame to have had Tommy John surgery. Isn't that a stunning little nugget of information there?
That's wild, man.
Now, we'll see, because the Sales and the Strasburgs of the world and this next generation of pitchers who all had, you know, Tommy John, some of them when they were 18 years old, Walker Buehler, right? Giolito. We'll see. But isn't that fascinating? Like, is Tommy John really just the thing you stamp on and go, yeah, you're going to still be a pitcher, but you're never going to be all-time great? I kind of wonder now.
Yeah, I don't know. You know what's really funny is I almost said Derek Lowe when you said that, because he's the first guy I thought of that was a good closer and then became a starting pitcher.
Yeah, it's not bad. No, Eck was a good guess from the hint.
Yeah, John Smoltz was an amazing closer.
Yeah. Lowe had some moments, man.
He was not even close to Hall of Famer, though. Okay, let's move on. Give me your number four here.
Number four here is another Blue Jay. It's Nate Pearson at 309.
Sure.
Why not gamble? You know, this is a guy that is not going to have a lot of restrictions on him this year.
You don't think so? Because I don't think the Jays are going to. I'm worried about the younger pitchers with the delay. I think teams are going to take it much more easy on their young pitchers.
Now, you know what's funny? I think that they're going to be more apt to have them throw those innings in the big leagues because if there is a limitation. Again, a lot of this has to. And you know what? If there is potentially this weird schedule of doubleheaders they're talking about and the 26-man roster, they might need to go to some of these six-man rotation kind of things.
Oh, man, if they do the doubleheaders, that'd be awesome. You just move the roster size to 28. You have six or seven-man rotations.
Yeah, well, you know, now, of course, the Mets have, you know, one less pitcher, so that's always great. So, so much for that. So, it's going to be Rick Porcello saving that rotation, Bobby. You watch.
Dude, just put Seth Lugo in the rotation. The guy's a monster.
He is, but we tried that once. It wasn't as good.
Yeah, yeah.
But Pearson, I look at, look, he threw 101 innings last year.
He's filthy.
There's no reason you think he can't go to 101. The guy went from A-ball to AA to AAA. Whenever you have a guy jump three levels in one season, that to me is always a guy that's ready. So he made only three starts at AAA, so I agree with you, he will start out at AAA most likely, but I don't see what more this guy's got to prove. Like, if he goes out there and he has 10 dominant starts at AAA, I mean, you just bring him up because that rotation needs the help desperately. Don't waste the innings at AAA. You've got a young, exciting team. You have an opportunity in Toronto to get butts in the ballpark for the first time in a long time. Go do it.
Well, here's my problem with Pearson. He only throws 104 miles per hour.
Is that it?
He's not Michael Kopech, who throws 105.
Michael Kopech's like, hold my beer.
Wow, we are on the same wavelength today, like big time.
There we go.
Number four, Hunter Harvey.
Oh, he was on my list originally. I took him off. Good job. Look at us.
I mean, here's the risk. He's not a closer, and then you've got a relief pitcher that doesn't get any saves for the Orioles. Here's the upside. You've got one of the top 10 closers in baseball.
Look, dude, I think that... And this is why I had him on my list, and that he was a late scratch. I added somebody else to the list who I thought was even better, who's going even later. But, dude, I'm with you. I think that this is a team, too, that has to kind of start to turn the page. And Michael Givens is a default closer. He's not the guy that you want closing games.
He's really good against righties. He is the worst against lefties. Like, you got to use him for who he is. He's not a closer.
And you know what? The new rule, too, this year, where everybody's got to pitch the three batters is... different. Might change some of the psyche too of, you know, maybe a guy like Givens, you're like, you know what, maybe we don't want him in the closer role. Maybe, you know, I think that sooner than later, Harvey is going to take a hold of that job. So I like that one. I think that's a really good one. And that's another guy too, where he's at 313 overall. So that's a terrific value when you're just kind of looking for late saves. I love it.
He's got some command issues, man. Him and Ryan Helsley both have a chance to pick up a bunch of saves.
But that's not a bad thing as a closer. You know, Craig Kimbrell had control issues, too, and they made him a closer, and he was lights out, because that's always the hardest thing when you're effectively wild, and guys go up there, and they're down three runs, and they're just trying to, you know, make something happen, and they swing a crap. Like, you know,
Brandon Workman walked, like, 80 guys last year, and he was the best closer in baseball, right?
Well, that's what effectively wild. Remember, Kerry Wood was like that, too. They moved him into the closer role for a while. He was pretty good there.
Kerry Wood was so much fun. I mean, I hate the Cubs, but I really wish him and Mark Pryor had stayed healthy.
Yeah, then Tommy John's, right? There you go. No Hall of Fame for them.
Yeah, and Mark Pryor had all those freak injuries, like the base running one, and he got hit in the line drive by an elbow. And Cubs fans, man, they had a sad go for 100 years.
They did. Well, the hardest part was that tantalizing moment, too, where they were good for that, you know, 2003 run, right? That's what you're talking about, the Derek Lee years and, you know, with Pryor and Wood and all that.
Moises Alou.
Yeah, those are good teams. And then...
Zambrano, Matt Clement, they were loaded, man. That team was loaded. As a Cardinals fan, I hated it.
I can understand that. Yeah, absolutely.
Here's my number three.
Go ahead.
Actually, you know what? I'm going to take Nick Senzel off my list because he's not very deep. We're going to add Dylan Carlson, very similar to Franco. He's a five-tool talent. I cannot see Dexter Fowler keeping this job with Dylan Carlson batting 400 in spring training and just being the man. And if it's not Dexter Fowler... Tyler O'Neill is susceptible to losing his job, too. I know a lot of people are going to say Harrison Bader is the most likely to lose his job. Guys, he's the best defensive outfielder in baseball. He's a great base runner as well. His on-base percentage is high. He's not great for fantasy baseball, but he's not losing his job. Okay, if Carlson takes a job, it's going to be Fowler, or it's going to be O'Neill, or it's going to be some kind of injury. Carlson's going to get 400 at-bats in the big leagues, and if he does, he could go 20-20 and bat 280.
Isn't it funny that Dexter Fowler is kind of just still in the big leagues?
No, it's not funny. I hate it.
No, but it is, in the sense that you look up and you're like, huh, that guy's still kicking around, right? You're just like...
Yeah, he's kicking around making $25 million a year and plugging holes when he should be a fourth outfielder for my team. I like him. He seems like a great guy. I really want to see him do well, but he's plugging a hole with somebody who should be starting. I mean, we could have kept Tommy freaking Pham if not for him, man.
He's in that grouping of, like, Jason Hayward, you know, guys like that where you're like, man, look at that guy getting paid.
Hayward at least plays defense and runs the bases well.
When he plays, yeah. I guess that's a plus. But there's guys that you just keep looking up. You're like, wow, I can't believe that guy's still holding it down. Look at him making money. Good for him.
All right. So Dylan Carlson, I think he's got a lot of upside. We look at every single year, these four rookies that finish in the top 50 fantasy baseball players. Carlson could be one. He's not being drafted right now. So Joe, why don't you get us to your number two?
All right. Number two, Ian Happ. Again.
Yeah.
Too early to give up. This guy has power. This guy has...
He's got some speed.
Yeah. And look, man, this guy had a really strong finish last year in September. This is a guy that has legitimate power. We know that. Not that long ago, he was 22 and he had 24 home runs in the big leagues.
He was a top 40 prospect. It's not like he was some bum who just had a fluke year.
And guess how old he is now? He's only 25. Can we please, for the love of God, everybody take a deep breath on some of these players? Because if this guy plays every day and plays 140 games, he's going to hit 20-something home runs. He's probably going to hit 250, 260, and he's probably going to be useful. And useful at pick number 330, that's great value right there. And he's probably going to hit towards the bottom of this order, right? He's not going to break that unless he is just brilliant and it allows them to bump Bryant or Rizzo back into the middle of an order, which is not impossible. Or maybe he even moves up to a five spot or something like that. Look, this guy is 25. It's too early to give up. He had a really strong finish, had some good things he worked out in the minor leagues last year. I'm just not ready to give up on Ian Happ. And maybe this will be the last year that I ride this wave, but I'm telling you right now, man, like the potential's there and the price is a free square. Why not take him for free?
He plays every position too. Here's what he's done.
That's the other thing too. He qualifies everywhere, dude.
Yeah. He's played three seasons in the big leagues. Okay. This is what he's done per 162 games, 26 homers, 74 runs, 76 RBIs, 9 stolen bases, 246 average. That's good.
Yeah. That's real good. 26-10? 26-10 with a 250 average? Okay, whatever. Like, that's fine. At pick 330, think about some of the crap that's laying out there that's just not going to contribute.
I'm going to find someone who did that exact thing last year, okay? Let's see here.
26-10 is even hard to find. And it's always dangerous when you look at that way.
JT Realmuto, but that's a catcher.
As a catcher, you can't really take him into account that way.
Ozzie Albies did the same thing, just a higher batting average.
Wow, that's an interesting food for thought right there.
Shin-Soo Choo, same player.
Yeah, and Chu's going where? Chu's going like...
He's being drafted, his ADP 214.
214, so that's 115 picks ahead of him.
Yeah, same player.
And 10 years younger.
Yes, and 10 years younger. He's not going to score as many runs, though, because he doesn't get on base as much as Chu, but...
No.
I'm going to go Chris Archer as my number two.
Oh, yes, one of my other guys. Look at that. He's not on my list, but I talked about him on this pod already, so I didn't want to do the same guys again. So
Yeah, I've talked about Chris Archer a long time, but it's been like 2 weeks, so I'm going to talk about Chris Archer again, okay? This is a guy who was always drafting the top 30 picks, but then he wasn't very good, and he was really risky back then, but like now it's just a gamble. Like, so what? You just have to cut him if he doesn't pitch well. He was great at the end of the season when he finally went back to being himself. Ray Searidge is gone. Archer can be himself again. It's a guy who's going to strike out, if he stays healthy, 220 guys. Maybe his ratios won't be great. Maybe he won't get a bunch of wins. But this is someone with legitimate top 25 starting pitcher upside that you can get stupid late.
Yeah, and he's first guy off the island in Pittsburgh because they're going to continue to move guys. And if he pitches well, there's going to be a lot of teams knocking on the door for Chris Archer because he's a good dude, solid clubhouse guy. You're right. You want the strikeouts and you're looking for late strikeouts. This is why I've been talking about Chris Archer forever. Another guy who's on so many of my teams, I want those strikeouts. I'll deal with the 4 ERA. I mean, it's basically Robbie Ray, but look at how much later you can get him. And he wasn't healthy last year. He had a shoulder injury, tried to pitch through it. They shut him down. And it's sometimes it's just about health. And that's what I mean. Like, as long as this was one of the guys that I wanted to see pitch in spring, where spring actually mattered, I just wanted to see healthy Chris Archer. And I don't know if I really got to see it. I think I did. But at the same time, you look at the ADP and you go, just give me a shot. Because if he does pitch well for the first, 6 weeks of the season, he will be somewhere else.
Yeah. If I could talk baseball with any guy in the big leagues, I think Chris Archer would be in my top five.
He's a good one.
Adam Wainwright's definitely number one for me. Who would your number one be?
Adam Wainwright. I remember him calling the Sirius station when I was working there, talking about he was mad about where he was getting drafted. And I was like, well, don't pitch to a 5 ERA and then we won't be taking you where, bro.
Like, he loves his fantasy football, man. He's such a goofy dude and he knows his baseball really well.
Yeah, there's some good dudes out there in baseball right now. Like, that's the thing. Like, baseball's got a great opportunity here when everything comes back to really push the product in a positive way, because everyone's going to be hungry for something, and I hope they make it just accessible for everybody. Stop the blackouts online. Stop all these. Just let everybody watch baseball and get into baseball again. Stop all that nonsense, because you've got such young, exciting athletes here playing this game, and you're falling behind the other sports in terms of connecting with the younger fan base. So it's time to do that, and the way you do that is by letting everybody watch games online, you know, and mobily and all that stuff. So is it time for number ones? Is this the big reveal?
Well, hold on. You'd talk to Bartolo Corona, wouldn't you?
Yes, I always sign in to the cast here with a different name, no matter what it is. But today I signed in as Bartolo Corona because I thought that would be fun.
So. Every single time it cracks me up, I always forget that Joe's going to do it, and then it surprises me and I laugh about it. This is the most I've ever laughed, though. That was a good one.
Hey, if we don't laugh, we're going to cry. So there you go. There it is.
All right. Who's your number one? Or do you want me to go first so that you can...
You go first. I've talked too much. You go first.
Yeah. Let me go Brendan McKay then. Brendan McKay is
nice.
My number one.
That's a good one, man.
Very similar to the other guys where I don't think there's going to be much of an innings limit if the season is cut a little bit short. And he was the best pitcher in all of the minor leagues last year. He was amazing.
It's like Cliff Lee, man. Just doesn't walk anybody. I just love it. Like,
but is he going to make the rotation? Because they've got Chirinos, they've got Yarbrough.
I don't think he makes the rotation, but I think he's going to make 20 starts this year. No matter what the scenario is, I'm putting him at 20 starts this year in my mind. Because I think there's going to be opportunity for that to happen one way or another. So, and if I think Wander Franco's going to come up and I think they're going to make a push, then McKay's got to be part of it too. So if that's the narrative I'm writing for the Rays, then McKay's got to be 20 starts in there.
Okay, so we're talking about 120 innings.
Sounds good.
Mike Clevinger was a top 10 fantasy baseball pitcher with 126 last year. Brandon Woodruff was a top 15 starting pitcher with 122. Montas, number 17 with 96 innings.
You just blew my mind, Bobby Sylvester. Mind blown. Wow. There you go. That's going to be a really nice 20 stars, man. I wish I had more Brendan McKay shares now.
I hope so, man. I hope he's that good. I hope he's Mike Clevinger. I don't think he's Mike Clevinger, but...
I got a guy who's only going to throw 120 innings.
Who?
It's my number one.
Is it your number one?
Oh, my number one. He's going 431 overall.
Okay, give me some clues because I want to guess this one.
Okay, he's going in the 400s, okay? He is not, or he wasn't earmarked to start the beginning of the season. But since the beginning of the season ain't starting at the beginning of the season, there's a chance that he might even be ready basically when the season starts or close to it. And he's a guy that always is going to miss time, but...
It's Rich Hill.
It is Rich Hill, baby.
Well, hold on. I want to say this about Rich Hill because we've been talking about him a ton on the podcast lately and on Twitter all over the place. They changed the balls, right? And the seams are raised. That's bad news for Rich Hill because he has blister problems big time. You remember A.J. Burnett used to always have blister problems? That's Rich Hill, too. When he misses time, it's usually because of a blister. I'm really worried about his finger skin, man.
Well, the good thing is, in Minnesota, ain't warm.
Yeah, that's so true.
Let's keep in mind now, he has moved to a different environment. Minnesota is chilly. Even in May, June, it can be a little chilly there. So he's not pitching in an environment where it's going to be 90-something degrees all the time or anything like that. So that is a positive as well.
By the way, that was my only negative about Rich Hill. Like, Rich Hill is a great call.
There's more negatives in Rich Hill, but a free pitcher at number 431 who, let's be honest, if he only gives you 130 innings a year, those 130 innings are still going to give you 150 strikeouts. So if you're talking about season-long roto, he's going to be a compiler in that sense. He's going to give you a decent ERA in the mid-threes. He's going to, or even better potentially, he's going to give you decent whip. If you're in head-to-head leagues, I get the, okay, it's not the greatest idea in the world because he really can miss time and all the other things. But if you're going to get 130 quality innings out of somebody, why not Rich Hill at pick 431 for free?
I'm so jealous that you used him as your number one, man. Because I'm like the Rich Hill guy. I've been the Rich Hill guy for 4 years.
Well, if you were the Rich Hill guy, then you would have him as number one, but you didn't. You went with the sexy young toy. I went with the old fart.
I thought about Josh James, too, but I don't think he's going to make the rotation now that Verlander's going to come back.
I don't think he is either.
Which is a bummer, because he's very similar.
Well, there's Chris Archer's another one of those guys, too, that I could see Houston kind of, you know, knocking on the door.
Ooh,
for.
Yeah.
There's Kyle Tucker, Chris Archer. There you go.
Let's trade Kyle Tucker to Pittsburgh.
There you go.
All right. All right, that sounds good. Rich Hill, in the 5 years since he became a starter, 2.91 ERA, 1.06 whip. He strikes out well over 10.7 guys per nine innings. There's only five guys who meet those three criteria. And they're the five, they're the four best pitchers in baseball, and then Rich Hill.
Yeah. Rich Hill, what a weird, you know, I remember Rich Hill won me, I think it was back in 2006 or seven. I think it was 2007. He won me a couple leagues because I had him. That was the year that he had the 100.
2007, when he pitched out of nowhere, 195 good innings.
Yeah, he was good, brilliant, right?
And then he didn't pitch again for like a decade.
I had two young lefties that year. One was named Rich Hill, and the other guy was Cole Hamels.
Ooh.
And I was like, man, look at these two guys.
That was back when Scott Kazmir was dominating too.
Yeah, right. And then Cole Hamels goes on this great all-star run year after year, always a good pitcher, always 200 innings. And then Rich Hill the next year, 19 innings, then 57 innings. Then people forget, the guy was out of baseball. He was in the independent league for a while. He had to come back into baseball and then work his way back in. And it's kind of crazy when you realize that. And the journey that he made to finally, you know, eventually get back into with the Dodgers, and he was good with the A's that one time, he was pretty good. You know, the guy kind of remade himself, and now here he is at the age of 40 this year and going there one more time. And look, there's no doubt that he is going to be in that rotation for the Twins. They need him in that rotation too. So that's a lot of my Rich Hill shares, where at the end of drafts, everyone just forgets about him. And I'm like, hey, you know, he's supposed to be ready in June. If the season starts in mid to late May, it's pretty much June. Like, what are we doing here, kids? Like, let's go get Rich Hill.
All right, Joe, that's all for today's show, and I'm mad at you for taking Rich Hill from me. It was a lot of fun, though. Thanks for coming on.
I've done my job. Thank you very much for having me, and it's always a pleasure here to hang out on Fantasy Pros. We hope you guys had a fun hour, and if you're just dying for a little bit more baseball content, go over to Sports Grid and check out Diamond Bets with me and WWE superstar Matt Stryker talking baseball. We just did recorded pre-taped from home, a two-hour show where we also did our players that we've seen with our own eyes that we would, you know, take on our own team for one game. That was a fun little exercise. The Ricky Hendersons and George Brett. So if you want a little entertainment, a little baseball, that's the show for you. Go check it out on YouTube.
That's cool, man. I like that. Okay, guys, give Joe a follow on Twitter if you don't already, at JoePisapia17. I'm at Bobby Fantasy Pro. And don't forget to sign up for the Fernando Tatis signed baseball bet at fantasypros.com/MLB contest. For Joe Pisapia, I'm Bobby Sylvester. Thanks for listening. And enjoy your baseball.